Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
So I must admit that I was very surprised when I received an email from Spotify where I was asked to record a live podcast when they arranged their end of the year party for their employees in Sweden. I'm not a big player, but Spotify sure is. All their staff got to choose between different interests to match them to different dinner venues, and the ones that showed an extra interest in winter skiing in mountains ended up at a after-ski-themed dinner party where I did a short live podcast to entertain them between courses. My guest for the interview was a friend of mine, mountain guide Carl Lundberg. Carl is interesting in many ways. First of all, because he works as a mountain guide, of course, but also because he combined mountain guide training with a PhD in robotics. But the main reason why I wanted to talk to him is that he started his company, Ski Touring Scandinavia, 3 years ago, where he now offers first-class ski touring adventures with minimal carbon emissions, choosing trains over airplanes. Since Spotify is the very definition of a global international company, the interview had to be in English. My name is Magnus Ormestad, and this is episode 32 of the international series of the Swedish outdoor podcast Husky. Husky is made possible thanks to Naturkompaniet. Huge thanks to Spotify for their amazing platform and for the trust. If you want to know more about this episode and the previous ones, head over to huskypodcast.com. You can follow Husky on Facebook and Instagram at the handle huskypodcast.
So Magnus, just to give you a little information, he interviews those who live their lives on their way up or down snowy mountains or along winding trails with no end. And he has a very exciting guest here today with him. So I'm so excited to give him a warm round of applause for Husky.
Thank you, Spotify. And Carl, don't feel any pressure. A very interesting guest. First of all, thank you, Spotify, for providing a... not a day goes by that I don't use Spotify. So good work. Keep it up. And I also like that you're the largest podcast platform in Sweden, I think. Good work. And also, thank you, because everyone who is here are hopefully at least semi-interested in skiing. So that makes me like you even more. So hope you're having a good evening. And with me here is Carl Lundberg, mountain guide Carl Lundberg. Welcome, Carl.
Thank you very much.
tell us, to get into character, sort of, and to kind of frame you, tell us what you have been doing for this week.
Yes, I just came back today, literally dropped my bags and came here from ice climbing week up in the north of Sweden. So I've been climbing frozen waterfalls.
Teaching it to future, not mountain guides, but...
I would say Outdoor Leader Academy, so future outdoor leaders. And we had a ice climbing course for them.
So that is kind of a typical example of what you do, life as a mountain guide, teaching other people to climb.
Yeah, I think in mountain guiding, there's always a training or education element. So everybody who does this wants to improve, and it's always part of our profession.
And about your profession, for someone who don't know what a mountain guide is, me, like, because I'm kind of in the industry, so for me, a mountain guide is more or less a walking god, more or less. but for people who don't know what a mountain guide is, how would you describe your title? How would you describe your job?
So I think the title or the work of a mountain guide, it's best defined in the Alps. So in the Alps, they started to take local people as guides in climbing expeditions, and that evolved into a very defined job. And that title then spread. So Sweden is part of the International Mountain Guide Federation, and we train, and we have the same title as them. So I can go down and work in the Alps or in other countries which has regulated this profession. And it includes then both skiing and climbing. So you have to do the year-round season.
Yeah, all year-round, exactly. And correct me if I'm wrong, but in the Alps, I think the title mountain guide is more or less... It's on par with police, doctor, fireman, or something. It's very, when it comes to status, for instance. And in some cases, it's even like it's more or less inherited. Like my father was a mountain guide, so I walk in his footsteps.
Yeah, as I mentioned, they have been working with this for a long time, so it's really established and recognized. And it's also, it's not only the mountain guides, it's also, for example, the ski teachers. And it's very controlled. The ski teachers do this, and the mountain guides do this, and the climbing instructors do that, and we try to respect each other. So I think it's a well-working community. And there is this legendary old French mountain guide with a cigarette in his mouth. And that's a fact. You can work as a mountain guide a life there. It's an actual profession. And in some other countries, like in Scandinavia, we're maybe guiding, outdoor guiding is something you do when you're young, and then you get a real job. But it's not the case there, so...
And if I would, as a client of yours, if I would to summit a mountain, almost no matter where it is in the world, you can assist me to the summit, hopefully.
Yeah, I think as many other professions, we specialize. So, like a doctor, you would like to go to a heart expert if you have a cardiac condition and so on. So we specialize in different things and. Pretty soon you realize you want to do stuff that is according to your specialization. So you don't want to be out trying things you don't manage well. So if you want to do high altitude climbing, you find somebody who's specialized in that. If you want to do ski touring, maybe you can come to me.
But then again, you're a freelancer. So you're like a don't get me wrong, you're like a carpenter or a plumber. And they're not known for turning down jobs. So do you often turn down jobs because you wouldn't feel comfortable with the client or the destination?
Yeah, I think it's pretty common. And the way to gracefully handle it is to advise them to go to my friend here and he will help you. So, for example, if you want to climb Matterhorn, I would say go to Swiss Guide and here's the name I would recommend.
Doing research on you, I came to the conclusion that, and we will touch upon this later, but you've been kind of born again two times. And the first time you were born again was when mountain guiding saved your life from being an engineer. Because you, at some point, you decided that engineer was the way to go. So how would you briefly... describe your life from birth to a place where you were an engineer dreaming of becoming a mountain guide.
Yeah, so when I was growing up and...
Not in Stockholm.
No, I grew up in West Berlin, actually, behind the wall at that time. And we had snow every once in a while, and it was black, and you had to shovel the black snow away to eat the white one under.
And it was full of syringes and...
Yes. but then we moved back to Sweden, and I started to be able to have more proper relation to nature, and I really was fascinated by mountains. But it was never presented to me as a you could have it as a profession. So I started off studying and I ended up selecting engineering, and I was at KTH here and doing a PhD actually. And I really had this feeling, this is not for me. So I started the mountain guide training, and I actually finished both.
PhD in robotics.
Yeah, I did it at the same time, and I wouldn't recommend that. It shortened my life with 10 years. But then I went into the mountaineering career, so I didn't pursue the other part.
And this you told me this just before the interview, that the first time you went skiing, you were 18.
Yes.
Do you dare to tell that to your clients?
I'm a late bloomer. But if you think about it like this, I have clients, and I had this discussion, and so I asked them, oh, so you've been skiing for a long time? Yeah, I've been skiing since I was 6. Okay, so you went with your family 1 or 2 weeks a year? Yes. And if you add those skiing days together, actually, I surpassed that in a season, so it's possible to catch up.
It's possible. So don't give up on your dreams if you want to leave Spotify one day. Describe, because at the point, like at the year that you were in Côte d'Ivoire as an engineer and PhD, like behind one door in front of you, you had your future as an engineer. And like behind the other door was your future as a mountain guide. What did you see behind those respective doors?
I think I didn't really have a clear picture of the work as a mountain guide. And I think nobody has when they start. You don't really know what it entails. But what was clear to me with the engineering part was that it was too much indoors. And I really had the urge to be more outdoors. So that was the selection, sort of.
But you didn't have a specific company or position in mind? As an engineer, I mean.
Oh, I was at that time signed up for the military, so they had a great plan for me.
I'm sure, with the robotics and all. So instead of making killer drones, you ended up guiding people in snowy mountains.
Yeah, that actually was the case.
Yeah,
because
good choice.
At that time, I was in robotics for the military, and they started to discuss weaponizing the robots. So that actually was the case.
Yeah. I think we all thank you. But life as a mountain guide, how was that to, like, the first year as a mountain guide?
A big realization is that it's not like you go on a vacation and or pursue your own needs. You need to realize and... So you need to become a teacher of some sort and really enjoy people evolving. So that's the thing. You're not doing it for yourself. It can be fun for you too, but you really need to get the joy out of seeing people having these experiences. So I think that's the big finding for me, to really have this teacher role or the coaching role, and also the safety, of course. But it's not primarily about me. It's finding the joy through somebody else.
But it's got to be very difficult to have the responsibility over, say, 3, 4, 5, or 6 people that you barely know, and they trust you literally with their life. It's kind of a tall order when it comes to responsibility. Was that a big thing?
It is a really big thing for all guides, I think. And you're really aware of it. And there's a bit of a competition here, because you want to deliver. You want to deliver these summits, or you want to deliver this untracked snow. But at the same time, nothing can happen. So you have to wage those against each other. And it's really a fine balance. And for me, in the beginning, I was really ambitious, and I wanted to deliver these top-notch experiences. And for me, it was a big thing to realize, hey, you need to be okay with being a bad guide, in the sense that you don't give the summits, you don't get the untracked snow, but you don't give an accident either. So that really was a definition for me. I need to accept to say, hey, I'm sorry, I can't give you this.
But it's this slope is untouched for a reason, and we don't want to touch that.
Yes, something like that.
Mm-hmm. Working as a mountain guide involves, like the standard thing is, it's a lot of heli-skiing. It's a lot of airplanes around the world, going to South America, going to Japan, you mentioned, and so on. That is not what Greta Thunberg approves of. And so here we will come to your, you were born again, because you started to get a bad taste from your line of work. What happened?
Yeah, so I was working on these glaciers, and I was going back to the same glaciers over and over, and I could tell my clients, look here, now I remember when it was up there, and now it's down here, and next time we come, it will be down here. So I can actually see the changes in nature, and I was telling people about that. And then it struck me, well, actually it's because of me. I'm part of it. I'm sort of destroying the thing I'm selling at the same time. So I decided to try to change the way I did my travels.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
And some 3 years ago or something, you founded a business called Ski Touring Scandinavia. What is the... how do you describe that company and that idea?
Yeah, so I decided I want to work as local as possible. So I only work with Scandinavia, and I only work with ski touring, not heli-skiing, for example. And I do all the long-haul transports by train, and then we use local transport at the end.
What is, from the perspective of the guest and the skier, kind of a difficult question, I know, but what is the difference? How would you describe the difference between ski touring, skiing trips this way, climate neutral, compared to the standard way where I just board a flight and go to Japan?
I've given that a lot of thought, actually. And I think the biggest difference is that you don't have to have a bad conscience. We really get good skiing out of the mountains we have here, especially when it comes to ski touring. And we just don't spend as much carbon doing it.
We met at an event a couple of weeks ago, and we started discussing because you told me, and I haven't really thought of it that way, but you said that working like this, going to places here in Scandinavia, which is compared to, for instance, the Alps, it's crowds. It's not a big problem for many of the destinations where you are going, and you told me that. That's actually, when it comes to the safety aspect of it, that's a lot safer for you to guide in an area like that. And I haven't really thought about it that way before. Because, of course, the risk of avalanches is a big thing, wintertime. Could you describe a bit, why is it safer to guide in Sarek than in Chamonix?
Yeah, so if you come to a mountain as a guide or as a regular skier and you want to pick an off-piste line, you go for the best line, of course, the safest with the best snow. And then the second guy or girl who comes goes for the second best next to it. And so it keeps going and the entire mountain gets tracked up. But for each new line, you're moving away from the best line, which was the safest. So you're sort of pushed further and further away from the safest option. And in the end, we're in a situation like in the Alps, where if I go there and work, it's really pushy. You go and do these really complex runs. It's not the best, safest line anymore. It's what's left over. So with more competition, you get pushed into unsafer conditions. And that's why it's so sweet to work in more isolated areas. We just do the one best line, and that's it.
You have, from your catalog now, the Ski Touring Scandinavia catalog, you have at least two destinations that are ranks very high on my bucket list. One is a ski touring trip to Sarek in Sweden, and another one is called Vatnahalsen in Norway. Tell us a bit about Vatnahalsen. It's got a fascinating story, I think.
Yeah, Vatnahalsen has become a favorite of mine. So one of the oldest railroads in Sweden in Scandinavia goes from Oslo to Bergen. And it was this steam railroad they built in the beginning of the 1900s. And to keep a railroad alive at that time, you needed a lot of people. So there were these villages along the train track. And each village had a small school and maybe 200 people who lived there. And some of them never got a road. And Vatnahalsen is one of those. So it has no road access. So in winter, you can only go there by train. And there's a hotel there. And it used to be a ski resort. It was framed as the St. Moritz of Norway in the 1930s when skiing was not so pushy. But then skiing was sort of forgotten. So the village was still there. There was a hotel. Nothing going on in winter, really. But then a couple of years ago, a Norwegian guy figured out.
Kind of an eccentric.
Yeah, Petter.
I've heard.
He went there and, could we ski here? And he picked up the ski touring. And they had never seen a ski tour in Vatnahalsen before he came there. And now he is he's running the hotel. And I've been helping him getting the business going. So I've been going there for 3 years now. And it's just the perfect destination. You go there with a train. You check in at the hotel. The people who are living there, that's the people that are there. And
that's your competition, sort of.
Yeah. And it's not competition. It's really a friendly atmosphere. And you just have the place there.
Because there's no lift operation.
No lift, no.
It's all earn your turns.
Yes.
Tell us about this. Tell us a bit about the scenery and the mountains and the aspects and the elevation and what kind of skiing goes on there.
So, I focus on ski touring, and I want to find places where you can do as many days as possible from one bed. And actually, Vatnahalsen for Scandinavia is kind of unique. There are many good ski touring destinations, but often you do like maybe 1 or 2 days from the hotel and then you start to using cars or other transports. But what's unique here is that it's quite dense and you have all the aspects, so north, south, east, west. So I done a week in Vatnahalsen from one single door without repeating any runs. So it's really a high density ski touring area.
And it's no long approaches? The mountains are fairly close to the hotel? Or
yeah. And it's, to be Scandinavia, actually pretty complex terrain, so a bit like the Alps. So many places in Scandinavia you can go to the summit and you can ski and any direction and you end up by the road. And there's not much route finding to do. But here it's actually more like in the Alps with cliffs and niches and couloirs. So it's a bit complex, at least if it's a whiteout condition.
So what type of skier should consider a trip to Vatnahalsen? At what level do you want your guests to?
Yeah, so there's no lift. So if you're confident in skiing off-piste, I think it's a good place to go. The ski touring part, the walking up, it's something I can teach a client during the day, but I can't teach somebody to ski in a day. It requires hours and hours of training. you need to build reflexes. But the ski touring part we can easily teach in a day, so it's for experienced off-piste skiers.
Could you give us the sales pitch for your ski touring adventure to Sodic?
Yeah, so you were mentioning Mount Everest before. This would not be Mount Everest, but it would be something in that direction. Sarek is a huge national park in the mountains of Sweden. It has the best skiing in Sweden, but it's far in, and there is no infrastructure, so you need to be on a sort of a ski expedition to go there. So you need to bring your equipment and your tent, and you need to set aside, I would say, at least 2 weeks. But then it's a proper ski expedition, like comparable to Svalbard or Greenland, but it's here next to us.
And you can take the train there.
Yes, yeah. So it's a fantastic experience, and you will possibly encounter a few other people there, but it would be an adventure on your own primarily.
So describe the mountains for someone who hasn't been there yet. And this is, of course, the springtime. April?
I would say April is the best month to go. And, I said it before, it's the best ski region in Sweden. So we have on Akka, on the gate to the national park, we have the longest ski run you can do in Sweden, 1,500 meters. And then it's basically lined up mountains like that, one next to another, and virtually nobody skiing there. So you have it all to yourself, and you could spend a lifetime there exploring it.
Is it allowed? Can heli-ski operators go into Sodic?
No, you can only bring helicopters in for rescue or some infrastructure or reindeer keeping.
But this trip, I guess, it is not for everyone.
I would say it would. You would need to be comfortable with camping out, so having the winter camping experience and ski touring skills.
And you need to be kind of physically able to haul a sled.
Yes. Yeah, we bring sleds, and you pull your own equipment, and it's basically fairly comfortable then because you have your camp with you.
Since you started ski touring Scandinavia, and that is like 3 years ago or something, because things are, especially in the, maybe not in politics, unfortunately, but in the public debate at least, a lot of things happen quite fast when it comes to being aware of climate changes and so on. Have you noticed any changes in, like, from our kind of narrow outdoor perspective, in the way people consider this and the way the brands, for instance, how they handle this fact?
Yes, I have. I think one premier area of change towards sustainability has been the clothing industry. So the outdoor clothing companies are really ahead, and they're pushing this forward. And then I think in the travel industry, it's starting to happening now with some train-based travel, but we're not at the frontier.
What gives you hope when it comes to the big picture?
I would say two things. One would be working with younger people, because there's really a desire to live sustainable with the young people. And another thing would be looking back in history and see that we actually did really big changes, like, let's say, the French Revolution, where we just in one instance changed an entire society. So I would say those two things.
Thank you, Carl, for sharing your visions and your engagement. And I highly recommend you, like you who listen, to check out his company and see what he offers. Thank you for listening. Enjoy your evening, and thank you, Carl.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Husky is produced in cooperation with Naturkompaniet. The music is made by Joel Mull.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.